the very air is different here, and it's a different reality, and it's founded on different precepts. And I guess the starting point, you know, to try and assist people is to understand koroto, which is kinship. And you're not going to get it because it's an intellectual shape in your brain that doesn't exist and probably can't be mapped, but it's very definite. You know, people are often fobbed off with motherhood statements about Aboriginal society or life, and perhaps the vagueness of those is appropriate in other areas, but here it's not. This is a very particular, very definite, very hard-edged system with very clear rules and relationships that affect everything and everybody, plant, animal, geological, and everyone who's anybody knows them, but you don't when you come here. In actual fact, that's okay, that's excusable, and you're all very forgiving and hospitable, and it's one of the precepts of Yolngu culture not to judge and to accept. This is another thing that's very contradictory to the incomers culture. So they're quite forgiving and excusing of people's ignorance. But what rankles me as an Anglo-Australian, as an outsider, having been here for 18 years, is the ignorance that there is any ignorance. That's what annoys me, because people have no idea that koroto exists, let alone its significance, or even what space it might occupy. And there's no space in their heads or curiosity to find out. And without it, you basically can't have a sensible conversation with a young person other than on your own ground. And if you came here all the way to have a conversation on your own ground, you might as well stayed on your own ground. And it's boring to live in a monoculture. And what Northeast Arnhem Land has to offer, you know, is that it's not boring. And the more involved you become in understanding all of the contradictions between the people standing in front of you and your own theories about life that have been inculcated into you from a very early age, the more exciting it gets. And so to be confused is actually the key. And if you're not confused, you're really not taking advantage of coming to the only bit of Australia that I know of that's still Australian. And these are archaic, ancient, but dynamic and innovative and creative and exciting rules and laws and behaviours that were here a long time before before the Anglos had sex with the Saxons and made the purebred Anglo-Saxon, whatever that is. You know, this is before the Picts and the Celts and the Martyrs. It's even before the Visigoths and the Vandals, you know, well before the Egyptians. It's before everybody. And it's ongoing. So I'm off to Darwin to win a prize with an artist who is painting a design that's verifiably 25,000 years old. It's replicated on rock shelters in Arnhem Land, the Rainbow Serpent, Whitditch, the morning after the cyclone. So the power of the cyclone, but not in the wintry European concept of black and white, good and bad, but in the Yolngu concept of, what the hell was that? It's a sunny day now because all the clouds have been sucked away by the cyclone, but look at the path that this huge serpent must have left. So it's got a bright side to it. Everything they almost seem to, you know, every culture's probably got its own taste or its take on things, and it's wrong and possibly racist to try and be too generalistic about characterising them, but you almost are sentimental. They live in a dimension with the idea that the people who've gone before and the people who are yet to come are still with us. And they feel that powerfully, and so they do everything with a cry in their voice. There's a country and Western sensibility about Yolngu life. You know, people cry at the drop of a hat. They don't forget the dead. They're still present. And we're all going to die. And Yolngu know this. And they don't hide from it. They don't deny it. They don't run away from it. And they grieve for it. They're sad. Because you're going to die. I'm going to die. Everyone listening to whatever drivel is coming out of their whatever device it is, they're going to die. You're going to die. Sorry. And I'm really sorry. And the young are really sorry. They're sad about it. But it's not going to stop them having a good time and getting on with life. In fact, valuing it more because they don't believe that they can actuarially, analytically, politically deny death if they just promise not to live. And they refuse to, and they're not trained to be put in a box where no life takes place in the hope that maybe they won't die because they know they're dying. And that's not good.
Well, a lot of people will be probably seeing that Telstra award-winning painter and their painting as the first piece of Yolngu art that they might ever see. So what would you say to them about that footage and the cyclone and going back into the kinship system?
Well, it's a lady painting her mother, you know, her mother clan. There's no Wittich, there's no, on a large scale, what a snake does to grass. And a lot of the things in Yolngu law are big things. But there was a bloody 12-foot snake, a 12-metre snake when they got here. And this is the oral record of it. You know, and so one of my abiding experiences over the time here is to be to downgrade or write off Yolngu stories as being some kind of mythic, fairy tale-y type thing not worthy of account, and turns out that it's science. It's an oral record of science, and that Western culture has caught up with a few things that I was told, which I understood to be fable, which are now accepted science in the Western side. So a little bit of humility, you know, our major vice seems to be, and I suffer it from it as much as anyone, is you know, an idea of supremacy. If your father didn't actually invent the light bulb, it doesn't make you special that you can turn one on. And there's a lot more, you know, when I first came here, and the Yolngu, I understood finally that Yolngu progress is cyclical, so it will be progress if we're all still here, having our children and living our lives in 300 years. And that sounded a little bit childish and a little bit unambitious. But now we understand that probably where I had that appreciation is probably going to be underwater, which is not going to be a good thing for a whole lot of people yet to come. And they were pretty ambitious. In actual fact, they may not achieve their wish because of our actions, that there will be no future as such. There will be no progress in that we won't be able to sit contentedly and reflect on the beauty of the world and the balance of nature. So I guess that's the benefit of having been here for a while.